What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drance, also covering the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. Coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The wait is over, Drancer. For the first time in a long time, it is a Vancouver Canucks game day. Finally.
Let's go, too. This is a great hockey game day if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you've got this big game, 4 p.m., probably the start of what promises to be the most fun stretch of hockey that fans of this franchise have gotten to enjoy in 10 years. I mean, we know what the schedule looks like. The team enters this sort of unofficial second half of the season with 71. I mean, I was thinking about it last night. They could go 500 the rest of the way and end up with 104 points.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is it. Like, win the West, the stakes are high. Win the Pacific, the stakes are high. And then tonight, you've got this game against a team that's averaged, you know, 115 points the last 3 years in the Carolina Hurricanes. And then that Edmonton-Vegas game afterwards, which has big-time implications for this team, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's just, tonight's going to be so much fun if you're a Vancouver hockey fan.
It's going to be great. It's been it feels like it's been forever since we've seen this team play hockey. A lot has happened since we've seen this team play hockey, including a big trade. So we've got a lot to get into on a game day today. Let's get right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, February 6th. And, of course, the Canucks are in Carolina to visit the Hurricanes. And a former Hurricane drafted by the team by Jim Rutherford, Elias Lindholm, will make his Canucks debut tonight. And looking at this matchup generally, Drancer, as you said, we're used to Carolina being an elite team, certainly in the regular season in the NHL, racking up wins and points at a really impressive clip. You know, earlier this season, and of course the Canucks beat the Hurricanes in Vancouver in December, that loss by Carolina, the win by Vancouver, dropped Carolina to 14-12-1. So really just a hair over 500. And, you know, they were kind of scuffling a little bit. I think they had a players-only meeting after that loss to the Canucks. Since then, whatever they said in that meeting, since then it really worked. They've been one of the best teams in hockey. 750 points percentage since then, and I think starting to look a lot more like those familiar Carolina Hurricane teams we've gotten used to seeing the last few years here.
Yeah, and that's always going to happen to them because of the way they control play,
mm-hmm.
right? Which I'm really curious to see how this works tonight, or like how this shapes the matchup tonight, especially because the leverage of getting the first goal feels especially high. The Canucks have done a great job opening the scoring for the most part this season. It matters a lot against the Carolina Hurricanes because if you can get them in a spot where they're pushing, it's a lot more comfortable than, you know, trying to get the puck away from them as they stack up those heavy shifts and don't even have to be sort of stressed out to score, which can be their issue sometimes, especially against a team like we know what the Canucks can do in terms of finishing. So for me, the first goal actually matters tonight. I know that's an old hockey truism, but it's something that I'm really curious to see how that shapes the game script this evening.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And another thing I'm watching, and again, Elias Lindholm making his debut, so there's going to be all eyes on him and you know how he's used, what kind of role he plays. Is there evident chemistry between him and Elias Pettersson? And we can get a little bit more into that. But from a kind of just team versus team point of view here as well, you know, Carolina, two elite special teams units, right? Both the power play and the penalty kill, really, really strong. And as we look at the Canucks and we start to wonder, you know, what's this team going to do between now and the playoffs? Obviously, the penalty kill still an area in need of improvement. Now, Lindholm should help there, and certainly the Canucks hope he will help there. And you know, I think wondering what the final form or the best form they can find, at least, of the power play is going to be is an interesting question as well, because we've seen it be so hot. We know the talent is there. for it to be one of the best units in the league, but it's also been kind of hot and cool at different points this year. So the Lindholm debut is a big thing, but also specifically, you know, his role on both special teams and in general, how the Canucks can perform against a really, really good special teams team tonight in Carolina, I think is going to be worth watching.
For sure, especially with the new alignment for the Canucks 5-on-4, including JT Miller in the middle. You know, that spot is typically called like the bumper spot, but really the player that's in the middle there can be a weapon. And I'm curious to see if it unleashes in any way some of the movement stuff, some of the move the puck around so as to create down low 2-on-1s. Like, I'm curious to see if Miller in that spot's able to freelance a bit.
Yep.
And sort of give us a different distillation of this kind of talk-it movement system that we've seen succeed and then also have some fits and starts over the course of the season.
Well, I think he's going to have to. And I think Talk-It will want him to, of course, right? But you don't want to...
Yeah, it could be fun.
You don't want to fall
more than anything into... what I'm spotlighting.
You don't want to fall into a power play configuration where JT Miller doesn't have a lot of opportunities to touch the puck, right? You've talked a lot about, you know, just his incredible IQ in that scenario. We've all seen him, how effective he can be skating downhill, you know, waiting for the goalie to just lean the wrong way and then picking his spot and scoring or dishing off. You don't want to take that away too much. You want to have different looks you can do, right? But when you have a guy who's as good with the puck on his stick on the power play as JT Miller is, you know, you want to make sure you can get him in that role as much as possible. And that's why I do think we will see Lindholm get some time in the bumper. We will still see Brock Besser get some time in the bumper.
Yep.
They just seem like more natural, hey, we're going to get you the puck, you shoot, it fits. Not that JT Miller can't do that. It's just he can do a lot of other things on top of it.
Yeah, well, that's what Tockett's wanted since day one, right, is the three guys with some movement, you know, especially. And it does feel like they've gotten away from that at points as the power play has, you know, come back down to earth in terms of what it's accomplished. It ran hot again, though. It's worth noting for the, like, 3 weeks before the All-Star break. And now there's a new body in front of the net, so it'll be fascinating to see how that changes things. I just think Miller in the middle, to me, is going to be a really fascinating subplot to watch. Just I'm just so curious to see what it looks like.
Yep.
And if they can, you know, tap into something there.
Yeah, and if it does, if putting him in that position kind of naturally leads to more movement because he does want to go get on the puck a little bit more. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I don't mean that in a bad sense. Like, he's going to be doing it irresponsibly. It's just, well, that's good because that's kind of what you want. And it forces movement from everyone else. So that's a little look at the Canucks and the Hurricanes tonight and the matchup out east. And we'll talk a little bit more about that with Corey Lavalette from the North State Journal at 12:30. Get some of his perspective on the Hurricane season and where the team stands right now. In terms of headlines, I did want to mention this. Arshdeep Bains was, of course, the Abbotsford Canucks representative at the AHL All-Star Game, and he had himself a night, takes home All-Star Game MVP honors with 5 points, also scored the game-winning goal in the like shootout challenge portion of the game. So huge night for Arshdeep Bains, fun experience for him, and you know a big feather in his cap. And look, you don't let an All-Star game influence the decisions you're making about a player or anything like that. Do you call him up to the NHL? But I did think it was just worth noting, you know, we've talked to Arshdeep Bains this year. It's been fun to kind of monitor his progress and see what he's doing. We talked to Jeremy Colleton last week and hey, he's making real strides away from the puck. And you do kind of start wondering, is there going to be a point this season when Arshdeep Bains gets rewarded, gets that call up from the Canucks based on the incredible season he's having?
Yeah, it, at the end of the day, it's just like you don't change your opinion or your evaluation, but when you've got a guy who's, you know, from the point that he was signed as an undrafted free agent, had this kind of rise, and he goes and does something cool, has a special night on a big stage for him, you know, it's just like another sign of progress, another bit of positive reinforcement, right, that there's something here. And I think the organization believes that, right? Like, I think Bains and Pod Colson loom large in this club's imagination, both in terms of depth options for this season, potentially, although in Pod Colson's case, I know for sure there's no rush, right? And that's a point of emphasis. But beyond, right? And that's sort of where I think the idea that you're going to struggle to have as much depth as this team has without internal improvement from players like Bains and Pod Colson giving you options this summer. You know, I know as this club straddles the here and now, the desire to seize this opportunity in front of the club, and that's obviously the primary focus. You know, it's really beyond this season where I think Baines looms large in Canucks planning, and this is just another sort of quality check mark to get on the way.
Yeah, it's just, again, it's look, we understand it's an all-star game, it's an exhibition environment, right? So you're not going to say, wow, like, you have to call him up after this, but it's just, as you said, a big night, a special night for a player who's taken these incredible strides, who, you know, has a chance to really be a proof of concept kind of signing for this organization. I don't just mean in terms of, like, you know, us giving them credit, but we've already seen them use Archdeep Baines to, you know, address the prospects at prospect development camp, talk about his experience. And as he continues to take these strides and develop like this, I mean, that's a huge example you can hold up to the other types of players coming into your organization and say, hey, look what he did. Look at the work he put in and now the opportunities that he's getting. And hey, maybe it's next year. Maybe it is some point this season. I mean, look, you know, Rick Tocchet's openly talking about there being jobs open in the top six, so you never know. Don't rule it out, but cool night for Archdeep Baines, and yeah, his NHL future is going to be very, very interesting to see when he does get that opportunity. Those are your headlines for today in the whiteboard. To the broadsheet, and I did want to, you know, there was lots of talk about Rick Tocchet's commentary about Ilya Mikheyev yesterday, of course, and I was listening to Dan and Sat yesterday on Canucks Central, and I thought Sat made some interesting points. No offense, Reach, but I thought Sat made some... I wasn't planning to say it like that, but I thought Sat made a good point, just kind of in the conversation of what will the Canucks do? Are they done? What kind of moves are we going to see? And Sat said, you know, at this point, there's a kind of logic where it's easy to look at it and say, okay, we've already spent our assets to go get Lindholm, and that's going to make us more conservative. But there is this logic where the more you spend on a season, in some ways it makes sense to keep spending on that season because you've raised the stakes and you've raised the expectations, right? And if you are looking at this season as important enough to go out and make a Lindholm-type acquisition, obviously, you have really, really high expectations. And so, you know, if there is a player in your lineup that maybe you don't think is quite living up to the role, maybe you don't think is quite living up to the salary, is there a situation where you decide to get, you know what, we actually have to go out and get another player to bring in? I don't, Sat wasn't reporting like, oh, they're shopping Mikheyev or anything, but just bringing that up that, hey, look, he makes money. Would he be possible to move? Could you explore something like that? And I think just in general, Sat reemphasizing also, you know, looking for that kind of heavy forechecking player that can complement stars in your top six. But I thought it was an interesting point about the stakes are high. So that means if there's any marginal upgrades you can find, it makes sense to go and be aggressive about them.
Yeah. You know, I think the Canucks, I was thinking about this a little bit last night in the context of Lindholm's debut. And, you know, there's a player type you'll get sometimes on teams that go deep into the Stanley Cup final. I'm thinking about like Michael Amadio last year for Vegas, where, you know, he's playing top 9 minutes. Is he a second line caliber piece? Like, it doesn't really matter by the time you get to that point of the year. Like, what matters is, can he sort of hold serve? Can he not hurt you in middle 6 minutes playing with star players who are expected to drive? And it does kind of feel like the Canucks maybe need one more of those guys. But that's not to say that the answer is not internal and playing on the third or fourth line currently, right? Like, I do think there's different guys who could potentially do that. And, you know, as we consider this charmed season for the Canucks to this point, like, you know, they haven't hit any of those ruts where they've had to really rethink sort of their overall forward configuration. I mean, we've seen them tinker, like, let's load up the top line, stuff like that. But, you know, we talked about it yesterday. The third line's mostly been fixed, right?
Yep.
We have a good sense of what the fourth line's going to look like. It's been, you know, we know that Pettersson, Miller on different lines has been the case for, what, you know, 45 of this team's games. So, you know, I do think I guess over the balance of the season, what's going to be interesting to see is how much change we see in terms of how different guys are used, and can they find other options internally, moving them into different responsibilities, or ultimately ahead of the deadline, do they decide we really do need that bottom?
Well,
that's going to be fascinating.
It's a good point. And I do wonder, you know, we talked about this yesterday, right? But you kind of said, okay, look, I expect them to cool their heels here a little bit. They have this chance. Mm-hmm. Now you bring Lindholm in. You kind of go with your first choice configuration. You see how that works. You have a chance to gather some information and I think try some of these internal options. I do think we're getting pretty good insight into their vision of the top six, which is two star-level duos, right, in Miller and Besser and Pettersson and Lindholm, and then finding the really quality supporting pieces that, as you say, you might not scream, like, top six player when you just look at them on paper, but that have the skill set and can complement those types of star players really well, right? So, like, I don't think we're talking about, hey, can they go out and find a way to get Gensel, too? I think we're talking about, can they go and find a guy who checks those boxes, you know, like a super-powered version of Phil DiGiuseppe, right, who does all those things that Rick Tocchet really likes that earned him a spot with Miller and Besser, but just has a little bit more upside and oomph as a player, right? I think that's what we're talking about. And so what I would expect to see is, okay, we're going to give the internal candidates some opportunities. I mean, we've talked about, obviously, Mikheyev's in there, you know, Hoglander, Garland, like Dakota Joshua, I think, could be an option, well, right? We're talking about that heavy forechecking player.
I also think we can fold Pius Suter playing with Miller tonight into this conversation.
Yep. I think that's fair, right? So I think we're going to see those options tried, and there are internal options, but then at a certain point, how much value do you put on going out and finding an external option as well, right? Especially if you're able to do it without sacrificing too much off your roster, because then you're increasing, you know, you're increasing what's already a strength, which is the forward depth of this team.
Yeah. No, it's, again, I mostly just expect them to watch closely.
Yeah.
And I still think defense is going to come out ahead in their assessment of what they want to add if they're sort of looking for that one final finishing piece. But, you know, if there's a glue guy type forward that they think can give them an upgrade, especially if that player has size, I'm sure they'll be tempted.
Yeah. And as you said, the Michael Amadio, that's a good comp, right? Nobody is like, it's not a sexy player. Nobody's like, oh, wow, we got Michael Amadio. But then he's just really, really effective, complements the star players really well. I think that would be a great fit, that type of player in the Canucks top six.
Just doesn't get chased, right? Yeah. Like allows you to sort of hold, allows your star players to hold serve.
Yeah.
Contributes to that environment in the playoffs. So you don't have to shorten your bench. So you've got that ability to fatten your lineup. I mean, it does feel like the Canucks need someone to step up and bring that a little higher up the lineup in their case, top line, second line.
Lineup notes for today, just an optional skate for the morning skate in Carolina. Of course, the team practiced Sunday and Monday coming out of the All-Star break. So two good practices. Tocchet, as he frequently does, gives the team the option today at the morning skate. So no updated lines or anything, but I mean, look, we saw the same lineup twice in a row at these two practices. So I'll just run through it if people have forgotten or weren't aware. Miller and Besser skating with Pius Suter on the top line, Pettersson between Mikheyev and Lindholm, Blueger, Joshua Garland, of course, Niels Amon, Niels Hoglander, and Sam Lafferty on the fourth line. And then on the blue line, it was Hughes, Hronek, Cole Myers, and Zadorov and Juulsen, and then, of course, the first power play unit, Lindholm, sliding in to complement Besser, Miller, Pettersson, and Hughes. So that's very much what we would expect to see tonight, at least to start. Who knows when the tinkering will begin from Rick Tocchet with the options he has now. Anything else to report on the ground from game day skate there, Drantz?
No. nothing significant.
Zero.
Looking forward to
absolutely
this one.
Nothing.
You nailed it.
Well, there you go. But as we said, we have a pretty good idea of what to expect, how they're going to line up, despite the optional morning skate. Playoff forecast, I mean, look, not a lot to update here. The league's really just getting back going after the All-Star break here. So first big slate of games tonight. I mean, I do want to highlight, you mentioned it off the top of the show. Obviously, everyone's hyped for the Canucks to get back on the ice and Vancouver and the Hurricanes to play tonight. But in terms of out-of-town scoreboard watching, Vegas Edmonton is a huge one for the Vancouver Canucks here, because is this Edmonton streak going to end? Like, what are they going to do? They've been so on fire for so long now, even going back beyond the 16 game winning streak. And I think we're really kind of waiting to see, is there going to be an actual race between Edmonton and the Canucks for the Pacific Division crown, right? And then there's also, you know, where Vegas finishes comes into play with this game tonight as well.
Well, you know, the prize for winning the Pacific, it feels like, isn't so much that you duck Vegas and Edmonton, assuming that they'd finish 2-3, which is highly likely with the Kings,
yep.
you know, month 6 week skid coming out of the All-Star break here. But to lock them into a matchup against one another feels very
that would be pretty
crucial.
Good.
You know, I mean, if you're building a short list of five teams, right, like five short list teams to win the Stanley Cup, I think Edmonton and Vegas should rightly be on it. And by the way, I think if you're putting the Canucks on the fringes of that list too, I think that's fair. But the point is in this division, right, the ability of one of those teams, and most likely it's Vancouver or Edmonton, to lock the other two into a head-to-head, that feels impactful this year.
Yes, I would say so. And, you know, looking at Dom's playoff forecast, so basically, I'll round up a little bit here, but basically both teams have about a 70% chance of finishing either second or third. You know what I mean? So
right.
maybe Oilers second, Golden Knights third, or less likely the other way. But so those pretty high odds of that being your 2-3 matchup in the Pacific. And if you're rooting for that, and I think you're absolutely right, from a Canucks fan perspective, that's the thing to root for.
Yeah.
That means you're cheering for the Golden Knights tonight, right? Like, you want to keep that
dogfight.
You want to bring Edmonton back away from the Canucks. You want Vegas to go out and get that regulation win and just increase the odds of those two teams clashing in the first round.
Well, especially because Edmonton's route, like, their road here is pretty narrow, right? A Canucks win tonight and a Edmonton regulation loss makes it prohibitive, right? I mean, Edmonton needs, like, Vancouver to slow down.
Yeah.
But if Vancouver keeps just, like, pace even to 60, 70% of what the Oilers do, they should be able to finish ahead of them, right? So Vancouver's path is wide. Edmonton's is narrow. Tonight's going to loom large there. And what a great night of hockey yeah. to welcome it back from the All-Star break.
But yeah, since December 13th, now Edmonton lost three games in this stretch before going on their 16-game win streak. But still, they've played 19 games. Edmonton has 32 points. The Canucks have 32 points in 20 games. So basically 0 points, or like 1 point if you want to do it on points percentage, that Edmonton has made up in almost 2 months.
I was right. Well, I was shaking my head because you go back you have to go back now more than 2 months to find the Canucks' third regulation loss. And that just blew my mind when I sort of like put that phrase together in my head. I was just like, oh my God, this is something.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty wild. It's pretty wild at this point. And we'll see if it continues tonight in Carolina. We'll wrap up the whiteboard for today with the gambling update, Dranser.
Yeah. Canucks plus 125. You can find them at plus 130. Road underdogs going in to Carolina tonight. Carolina priced between minus 145 and minus 155. That's like a 60% win rate. That's a pretty respectful money line in Carolina's favor. The over-under opened at 5.5, but I think the market really liking Vancouver's chance of putting up some goals against, you know, Carolina goaltending, which has been average at best
mm-hmm.
this year. It's gotten steamed up to 6.5. You can get even money or even plus 105 on the over. You'll get less steam, minus 125 or so, on the under 6.5 going into tonight's game.
Now, I have seen some people kind of questioning, is there some disrespect from the odds makers to the Canucks going into this game? And I mean, look, you're still on the road playing a team that's been like the fourth best team in hockey over the last couple of months here. Now, the Canucks have been like the second best team in hockey over the last couple of months, so I can see it from that perspective. But look, you break this down as kind of a road meeting against a team that's roughly your equal, if not viewed as a little superior. I don't think this is a big sign of disrespect. I think maybe you look at it more as a sign of confidence in the Carolina Hurricanes rebound. But that is...
Carolina has the fifth best odds to win the Stanley Cup, right?
Yep.
Only Florida, Boston, Edmonton, Colorado have shorter odds in terms of a consensus look at the books. You know, the Canucks are ninth or tenth. Now, should the Canucks be ahead of, like, the Maple Leafs and the Stars? I'd say, yeah, that makes sense to me. So if you want to say, hey, you know, Vegas is still sleeping on the Canucks a little bit, I think that's fair. But I think this one in particular is more reflective of the respect that the market has in the quality of this Hurricanes team.
That's the whiteboard for today, February 6th. It's a Canucks game day. They're playing the Hurricanes. We'll chat Hurricanes with Corey Lavalette from the North State Journal coming up next year on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.